Welcome to the Pure Bliss Show with Mema Carmo. This is where we'll inspire you to transcend, transform, make magic, live your soul purpose, and be the unicorn that you truly are. Live in pure bliss.
Hi, everyone. This is Mema Carmo, and you're listening to the Pure Bliss Show. Today, I have someone with me who I greatly admire. She's the founder of Designs by Debbie Jo. She's an advocate, an activist, and a woman with a heart of gold. Debbie Jo, welcome to the Pure Bliss Show.
Thanks, Mema. Happy to be here.
Yeah, awesome. So before I start, I wanted to kind of set the tone. I read a quote that reminded me of you by Robert Ingersoll, and it says, we rise by lifting others. You're somebody who I met through your generosity of heart. You have so many friends. You're so loving. And when I think of people who are generous and kind-hearted, who give back, I think of you. So tell me, why is generosity and giving back so important to you and such an integral part of your life?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for your kind words. I think the reason it's so important to me because I have received so much during my life. You know, I grew up, I had grandparents, I had aunts and uncles who, you know, were there for me. I had friends who were there for me. Later on, I got married and had a wonderful husband. Even though there were struggles along the way, you know, be it with jobs, school, you know, things that had happened during the marriage because of illness, I always felt that people were so good to me. So my thing is I want to give back to those people or to other people less fortunate because I don't care what happens in your life. You know, I have a roof over my head. You know, I have a great job that I just love, has its challenges and all, but you know, I still love it, and I have wonderful family and friends. So that's why it's most important to me, because so much has been given to me in my lifetime.
That's wonderful. So take me back to your family and how you grew up, and what was your life like as a young adult?
Well, I grew up in upstate New York with a brother, younger brother. My parents both work. They're both IBMers. And at times, there was a lot of stay-at-home moms, but my mom was not a stay-at-home mom. But we, you know, they always made sure they had time for vacation with us. We always had special vacations during the year. And I think having her work helped me to grow because there was a lot that we had to take, you know, responsibility for. I was very fortunate to have three grandparents, my dad's mom and my mom's parents, till I was 40. They were always there for us. So if my parents weren't there, there was always somebody from the family. My dad had numerous brothers and a sister, and my youngest aunt, who was 12 years older than me, and uncle, who was 9 years older than me, they were more like really big brothers than aunts and uncles. You know, I have, you know, a couple of the same friends that I knew since I was 10 years old have followed me through life, and we've kept in touch and maintain a relationship through family and all. Went to public school, then to Catholic school, which was wonderful. It was a smaller school, 110 in our graduating class. So that helped me to grow some, too, because you weren't lost in a huge crowd, and that
right.
made a big difference.
Yeah. So one of the things that you just talked about was, you know, your friendships. And one thing I greatly love about you is that you have tons and tons of friends. And you have a way of making everybody feel so special, and you make time for everybody. I mean, so what is it about friendships that mean so much to you? Because you give a lot to your friends. You don't just, and you have so many friends. How do you do it all? And what is it about these people that, and everybody you meet that you're able to give so much love and so much of your heart and time?
My biggest problem is I don't feel like I have enough time for my friends. I do have them when I, you know, I've had different jobs and, you know, lived in different places, and they, you know, I keep people in my life. You know, I have like a little bit from everything, and they're in my life because they're just really nice, loving people, even though I don't see them all the time. You know, they're still in my heart. It was funny, when I was in college, one of the girls that was leaving, she was a senior, I was a junior, and I said, oh, I'm going to really miss you. And she said, you know what? She goes, I'll look back on these years later, and you just always remember that at some point in your life, there's somebody out there that loves you and is thinking about you or how you touch their lives. So I try to take the guilt out that I don't get to spend as much time with my friends as I would like. And, yeah, and try to remember that, you know, they're there. And when I get back together with these people, it's like no time has passed at all. They are important. They were there for me during very, very hard times. And, you know, I will never forget that.
Yeah, you know, I think that's such an important thing to bring up. Speaking of which, that's how we met, you know, and that ties into your generosity of heart and your capacity to love people. I think you kind of take that for granted, but I love that about you because when we met briefly through some charity events. And then one of my dear friends was, you know, in transition from breast cancer, stage 4 breast cancer. And you just reached out to me and said, you know, you need to talk to somebody and I'm here for you. And I remember how you know, I'm like, how does she have time for me? And she has all these friendships and her business and so many things going on, but you kept reaching out. And then you called me one night around 10:30. And if it wasn't for you, I don't know how I would have gotten through dealing with my friend's, you know, transition and her passing. And I remember calling you many days, driving to work, going to meetings, just bawling my eyes out. I think that capacity to love people comes from having gone through challenges in one's life, as you know, as a person, and you've gone through your share of challenges. Tell me about Howard and how you met, your love story, and how that shaped your life and who you are today.
Well, I always laugh because we met in a bar. That was back in...
I love that part of it.
Yes, 1979 when
bars
that's where
awesome.
You met. That's right. There was no swiping left or right. It was like it was there. And
right
in front of you. Yeah, it was pretty funny. And when I met him, I didn't know it was going to happen. I just really kind of felt like I could trust him. And I knew we would probably be friends. I wasn't looking for more than that. And we started going out, and he was newly divorced, and his whole thing was, I'm not dating younger women, you know, I'm not going to be that man that does that. And he was 39 and did not realize I was 23. I did not realize he was 39. So it was kind of a shock to both of us. But for whatever reason, you know, we were different, but we were the same. He was a very kind, loving man, accepted my friends and family. And we had a great time. We dated for 5 years before we were married. And we were married for almost 27 years. However, after the 7th year of marriage, 2 months later, we found out he had leukemia. And as you know, going through cancer and all the people that, you know, you've dealt with, sometimes you think, oh, my God, that's the end. Well, he lived for 20 years. He lived longer than they thought he would. But it wasn't all sad. You know, he had a lot of challenges with the chemo, numerous chemo sessions, interactions with drugs that he had to take and other things. But in between the times, when he wasn't on chemo or having to go through stuff, we traveled and spent time together. We made it the happiest life that we could. And he was just a very supportive person. And we just had a good life. He was my best friend.
Yeah, I really admire that about you both. And, you know, watching you together taught me a lot about love and about friendship. I feel like a lot of people think about love as something that it's about, you know, sex and superficial things. But you two really gave me an idea of the deepness of friendship and mutual respect and giving the person space to be who they are. Because you are different people, but at the core, you are the same person. You have the same values. And so tell me about the qualities that brought you together with him that are important to look for in a partner.
To me, it's trust. I mean, trust is a huge issue. Kindness, willingness to accept me for who I am. I'm not an easy person to live with. So.
Yes, you are. You know? Just get you a bottle of wine, get you a bottle of wine, get you something to eat and hang out and just get drunk and you're happy.
Well, I do believe my middle name is Princess, so, you know, if that tells you anything, no, I'm just
that's
kidding.
Yes.
No, I mean, I can be challenging and stuff, and the fact that he accepted or anybody accepts me for who I am with my faults and all, and the fact that they can incorporate my family into their lives as well, because they are a big part of my life, and it's kind of like if you get me, you get everybody. It's a whole package there.
you have a lot of friends and a lot of a huge network. I sometimes find that when I am with somebody who's new, like my world is a little bit too big or large, because some people can't handle all the people that we can manage at one time. I mean, we have a lot of friends and we're always out and about. So I think it's super cool that he was able to have his life in his space, and you have, you know, 10,000 people around you, the phones, you know, buzzing, people are texting, calling, and just he's able to accept you as his princess and who you are, and just kind of, you know, coexist and be together.
Well, I think a lot of why he did that too is once he became ill, you know, it's hard to go out and leave him, or if I had to travel or do something. And his biggest thing was, you know, I don't want you to lose your friends. I'm not going to be here forever, and they're important to you, and you need them in your life. So I thought that was very unselfish of him during times when maybe he wanted to say, hey, you know, let everybody else go and just be with me. He saw the importance of having people in my life and having the relationships I have, not only with my friends, but with my family, sending me down to spend, you know, a week or so with my grandparents, or spending time with my mom when she lived in Florida, you know, just being able to have the family that I needed around me, and not making me feel like I was making a choice.
Yeah, that is powerful. I think that with couples who have lost lasting relationships, what makes them last is that ability to just accept the person and allow them to blossom and grow and not have to choose between, you know, friends and family and the relationship. So I love that about you guys. So, in terms of, tell me about, you know, you were a nurse and you are a nurse, and then you got into designing people's office spaces and homes. Tell me about that transition and what inspired it for you to go from nursing and delve into the design business.
Well, you know, it was tough because I love nursing. I love my job. I loved what I did. I was a specialist the last 16 years of my career. I didn't like the culture that was surrounding the hospital because I felt like as nurses, we were taken for granted, and that was hard. You know, you felt like you worked really, really hard. So I was feeling very pulled, plus the fact that I was running my husband's chemo at home. When he was on one of the doses for a couple of years, we did that, and then I had to let that go. But it was like I was either at doctor's offices with him or an infusion, and I was at the hospital, and I was really getting burned out. And one day, my mom and I were in church, and I just sat there, and I just started crying. And she said, "What's the matter?" And I said, "You know," I said, "I've really got, you know, except for her having leukemia, I have an absolutely wonderful life. Why am I so sad? I mean, it's, you know, I don't have to work full time. You know, it's just a couple of days a week, but I'm just sad." And she just looked at me and she said, "Tell me one word that would make you feel better." And I said, "Decorate." And she looked at me and I just want to make things look pretty. You know, I didn't know what that meant.
Right. And you like pretty things.
Exactly. You know, I just want pretty things. And so I sat there. So we went and had coffee and talked about it. She said, "Well, go talk to Howard." So I went back and talked to him and said, "Listen, I don't know where this is going to take me, but you know, I paint and everything, and you know, I have a natural eye for designing." I said, and I started looking into things. I said, "What if I just did like redesign and staging, and I'll get a certification for it and do all this and that? You know, I'll take the class or whatever." And I said, but, you know, he was retired. It was 2008. The economy was crappy. And he just basically said, "Go for it. You know, while I'm here, go for it." So I did. And my friends, God bless them, were my guinea pigs. It's like, you need a house redo. I said, "As long as I can take pictures and you go ahead and, you know, give me a testimonial, it'll be good." And the funniest thing was my one friend, she goes, "I think I can help you build a website." So we went to a thing and said how to build a website. And 3 hours later, we were still on page one of how to build a website and couldn't figure it out.
So I
bartered with a friend's daughter who I did her basement, and she did my website to start. And it just
How did it turn out?
It was good.
How did the basement turn out?
Oh, her basement turned out great. It turned out really, really good. She was happy.
Because you did it for her. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we were able to work it out and stuff, and then things just started happening. I met a contractor, and he's like, would you be interested in trying to, you know, pick out some fixtures or pick out things? I'm like, sure. So he brought me in on a little project, and then he brought me in on a big project. And from there, it just started moving. I started doing designs of, you know, high-end kitchens and baths and extra rooms. Mm-hmm. And then I went into another house who she brought me into her office space and her lake house. And then she introduced me to somebody that brought me into their office space and their home, their retreat that they were building. And then the next thing I know that I'm doing, I'm helping design a ski resort or a ski home up in Seven Springs. So it was just kind of like everything kind of kept rolling. And it was hard to catch up at first until I think this last year was when I kind of pulled everything together to get a clear picture of what I'm doing with design and stuff.
Yeah, I think I feel like it's so important to kind of just highlight the fact that you followed your soul. You followed what brought you joy. You heard the word in your head or whatever. You heard the word design, and that was something that was really important to you. And I love the fact that I feel like there's a common thread throughout your life. The qualities that made you good as a nurse was, you know, your compassion, ability to feel people's energy, and you're empathetic, right? And so those same qualities come into play when you're looking at someone's space, whether it's an office space or a home, is you go into their homes and you feel what the person's wanting and what the space needs and being able to draw that out of the person and then bring it to life through design. That is so powerful. So I think people need to really think about the fact that it's important to look at how to monetize your business and be successful financially, but I feel very strongly about following what makes you happy. And when you pursue your joy, it really brings out the best in you. And so here you are, you began in 2008, and now we're in 2017. So that's close to 9 years of you having jumped into your passion and you're monetizing it, right?
Yeah, it was pretty scary a couple of years ago where I ran for, you know, I was nominated for in the Leukemia Lymphoma Society Man Woman of the Year thing and campaign. And right after I was hospitalized, I think was being run down, and then I broke my ankle. So it was almost a year and a half of just trying to build myself back up. And so I really was a little scared. And it was that 7-year thing where they said, your business is either going to fail or it's going to do well. And I thought, oh my God, it's failing. It's going to fail. I can't keep, you know, I was just so overwhelmed. And then I just, you know, I just said, well, you know, keep moving forward, keep thinking positive thoughts, keep going for what you really want. And what I realized while I was kind of stuck in a boot hanging out with a scooter.
That was a nice scooter, by the way. I enjoyed riding in it.
I know you did.
I enjoyed riding around your living room in the scooter. When I was helping you out.
Yes, you were.
Not for you, though. I was having fun. You weren't having a good time.
No. But, you know, I realized I could combine my nursing and my design and work with aging in place. And not so much just about aging in place, but living in place. What do you need to do to your home such that if you're followed by some sort of catastrophic illness, if something happens, and some people can't go home because their home is just not, you know, the right place for them to be to move forward with physical therapy. They can't get around and do things. There's too many stairs. And my thing is how can we get you home after like an acute rehab stay or something instead of going to a nursing home for 2 months because you have no other choices, you know, and people heal better at home. You know, it was also working, you know, as a hospice nurse in my early career. And mm-hmm. how do we make the home, as people are transitioning, to make it a safe place, not only for the person that's transitioning, but for the family, because it is supposed to be a beautiful thing when you go through that. And I also think one of the bravest things that any person can decide on or family can agree to, it's very brave to allow, to honor that person to pass. And the space should be such that they can do that and that they aren't, you know, it's not difficult. It's not scary. There are a lot of children that are involved in this. And how do they get to see their mom or their dad or their grandparents and be able to sit by their bedside without feeling like they're just in another hospital room? So, you know, I'm trying to tie all my nursing into this with the design now as I'm getting older. So it's what I would want for me.
I think that's really powerful and beautiful. I know for me, my grandmother, when she was getting, you know, to the point where we couldn't take care of her at home anymore, we had to put her in a home at some point where, because she needed care, we couldn't give her, you know, and it was hard to do that, but we thought we're going to make it as beautiful for her here as possible as it is at home. And so, you know, having someone like you come in, you know, if it's allowed into a home and a nursing home and making it beautiful would have been a great gift. We did the best we could. And she actually could be in, you know, the family's there all the time. There's kids coming in and out. So it gives a person an added dignity and comfort, I believe, when they're going through an illness or a transition, to be able to have the home away from home and have family members come and be able to relax and sit there and keep company and just spend time together. So I really look forward to watching this part of your business blossoming and growing. It's just a beautiful thing that you're doing, and you're living your sole purpose, right? This is what you were born to do.
I think this was it. It just took 7 years to get here, but I think this is where I'm going. I mean, I still love doing all my design, and I will still do that, but I have a thing in my heart, and I don't know if it's because I had such a wonderful experience with grandparents. God, I had my great-grandparents till I was 16, 17. So I've always had older people in my life, and I almost got my master's in gerontology because I loved working with older people. I really kind of feel like they're the forgotten generation, and it's, you know, and they say teens are the forgotten ones, but they still have people looking out for them. They still, you know, hopefully have their parents or someone that is looking out for them. But for me, I think it's the elderly. They've lived a long life. They're more deserving of being comfortable in the place that's the safest for them to be in.
Yeah. And people in this country, I find, as a culture in America, people don't really often honor those who are older. They're seen as, you know, you're past certain age and you're, you know, out the pasture. But I find extreme beauty in loving people when they're at that point because they've, you know, taken care of us and nurtured us and loved us. And to me, it's one of the biggest ways to honor someone's life, which is to care for them as they're getting older and aging. And my family members and I, my grandmother, when she was sick, we, you know, put together a schedule of who would be with her at certain times. And, you know, we all had a schedule of days and times to leave our jobs and come, you know, come after work or whatever, and just spend time with her. And the thing that was beautiful about the time is that it really bonded us as a family because we had dedicated time with her all the time. And when she passed, we missed her, but we had such a special time caring for her that it just, you know, those times carried us through as we were mourning her loss. So this is really powerful and amazing that you're doing. And I look forward to seeing it, like I said, blossom and grow. Tell me about did you write a book? I think you did write something when you were doing your LLS campaign. And tell me about that. And because you began pursuing what made you happy, and it led into your business, and that led into you doing the LLS campaign, which you were very successful in, and then you wrote a book. And so I feel like there's something beautiful in following your soul and following your joy, and it helps you to get to do things that you never thought you'd be doing, like public speaking. So, you know, tell me about some things you've had happen that were successes, like the book and, you know, Sterling Woman and speaking that you ended up achieving due to you following what made your heart sing.
Yeah, the book I wrote basically was Howard's and my story from when he, you know, was diagnosed with leukemia on. And it was, and it's a small one, and I've had a number of people ask me to expound on it and make it bigger, make it a much bigger book. But it was kind of like that from the eyes of a caregiver, not only just, hey, what he was going through. And I think what I was trying to do with it is to show people, like, we aren't perfect, and we're going to get angry at the person that's sick because you don't know what else to do. When you can't, I find when we can't help or do things, we tend to get angry because we're angry at ourselves, you know, not at the person, but at ourselves. But it was more or less, too, to show people that even though you're giving a diagnosis that is very, very scary and you have really difficult times, there are really beautiful times, too. And life does move on. It was living with cancer. It wasn't about dying with cancer. It was about living with cancer. How do we make this a part of our lives? And, you know, going forward with LLF, be able to raise enough money to put a grant in his name, you know, to fund and research CLL, which was what he had, you know, was just such a powerful thing. And I had never spoken publicly before, so my first speech was at Sterling Women, and I was so scared, and it was like a record crowd, you know, and there were a lot of men there, too, and who were friends of mine that came, you know, construction people and stuff, which was kind of neat, those, you know, construction companies, so that was very cool. I realized I could get through it, and I think I do have a voice in, you know, in helping others, you know, telling my story here and there just to provide some hope. I actually sent an old high school friend of mine, we reconnected on Facebook, and actually we hadn't seen each other since probably junior high, because when I went to Catholic school, but we were friends back in elementary and all, and I sent it to her, and she read it, and she said she went through this with her mother, and she said she wished she had it before, because she said, I never realized other people felt the way I did. She said, I felt like I was all alone, and nobody could know what I was going through. And even though I told her, you know, when you're losing somebody in your life, you know, be it a child, which is horrific, or a spouse, or a parent, you know, it loss is loss. It doesn't matter what it is. It's loss. And everybody reacts to it differently. You know, yes, there is a natural order of things that your grandparents go, then your parents, you know, then you. Yes, it was hard losing a spouse, but, you know, losing a child is not a natural order of things. So it's everybody, I think the point was that everybody's different in how they deal with it, but how can you find the good parts that were there in your life and to keep these, and to keep the fun memories alive, you know?
Right.
You know, to me, that's the biggest thing. And, you know, I hope to be speaking on it more, and tying it in with the aging in place. You know, I'm sorry, these are the last days of your life as you're going through, and it could be years, but you deserve someplace special. You deserve to be, as long as it's a safe place and medically it can be handled, you know, you deserve to be in some place beautiful.
I wanted to kind of, you know, go back a few minutes. You made a comment about caregiving, and you talked about being able to, you know, enjoy your life and be happy and enjoy the fun times. But I also find, because I work in the cancer space, that there's things like, you know, caregiver guilt and caregiver, you know, you're sacrificing yourself to care for somebody you love. So it's really not a sacrifice in a sense, because you love doing that. But you do have to put your life on a hold to an extent when you're the primary caregiver. And I found that people who are caregivers, oftentimes when the person has transitioned, have a sense of figuring out who they are again and what their life means without this person in their life, and while they're happy to have time to rest and to, you know, kind of find their new normal. There's some kind of guilt, and there's a lot of loss in transition and transformation, because you've had somebody in your life you've been taking care of for a long time. So I wanted to address the topic. It's a really sensitive topic that I've heard people bring up to me, and the feeling of not being able to truly voice what it feels like to do that, because you love the person, but there's, again, the dynamics about putting yourself on hold. And I've seen many caregivers really, you know, kind of come to life afterwards and struggle with depression or redefining their life. Can you talk a little bit about what it is on the other side to you know, to go through that?
I mean, I missed him horribly. It was like not a minute went by that I missed him. But then I was very unhappy. I was unhappy in our home, and I loved our home. You know, we had lived there 28 years, and it was just, you know, he loved the home too. And so, but I couldn't sleep in the bedroom. I was sleeping in the family room, because I just couldn't stand to go upstairs to go to bed at night. And then I just, you know, my mom was like, you've got to get rid of this house. And so many people tell
right.
you that, oh, should wait a year before you make decisions. Well, that's really kind of crap. You got to make your decisions what's right for you. You know,
exactly.
Some people find much comfort staying where they were. I did not. I felt overwhelmed. It was a big house. And 3 months later, I was wandering. My mom and I were over in Ashburn, and I wandered through these brownstones, and my mom took one look at me and said, this is your home. And so when I got it, I was excited, but I also felt guilty that I was moving forward. And I tried to think of it as, well, let's just say I felt guilty that I was moving on. I tried to think of it more as moving forward. That helped me get through it more as opposed to on. He was still always with me. That was not going to be an issue. You know, it wasn't like I was leaving him behind. But every time good things happened to me, for the first couple of years, it was really difficult because, you know, I wanted to share it with him, and I would talk to him all the time, but I couldn't. And then it's like, wow, all these now good things are happening to me as well. Is he gonna think that I forgot about him? And that was, yeah. I think that was really hard. That was really, really hard to embrace the things that were happening and the progress forward that I was making in either my business or friendships or whatever, or moving, but it's still, a lot of people didn't realize what I was going through. I was good during the week. Saturdays were horrible because those were days that were for he and I. I mean, yeah, but the other days weren't, but it was kind of like Saturdays for couples, for married couples, whatever. And I would sit on Saturday night and just cry because it was like, there's no one here. Or I'd go somewhere and I'd go to stay overnight and I'm thinking, wow, nobody really cares where I am, which is not true. You know, my mom does. People do care. But in my mind, I had no one to call to say, hey, I made it here safely. I was like, nobody really cares, you know? So it was a lot of getting through that. But also the fact that he supported me so much in starting my business, I had to keep moving forward because I didn't want it to fail. I wanted to give it everything I had because he gave me that opportunity to stay in a business that I loved, even if I wasn't making a lot of money, but to stay here and not have to worry that I had to get a 9-to-5 job to support myself and stuff. Or, you know, so it was, I think the moving forward helped me because of knowing what he put for me, what he gave to me to move forward.
Right. So what advice would you, I love that story because knowing you, I know how, you know, you're a light to everybody else. And we talked often and you would call me and you, of course you were going through this, you were depressed and you were scared and it was a lonely time for you, but people on the outside didn't know what you're going through on the inside. I found it was hard to watch because I wanted to tell, you know, make you feel better. But I think it's so important to have compassion for the caregivers because when you're caring for the patient, everybody's attention is on the patient, but the person that's there is going through things. And then the aftermath of that is just such a, you know, it's a hard transition, but I really admire how you've managed it and how authentic you've been about what you've been going through. So tell me, what key advice would you give to other caregivers as they're in the caring phase? And then after the person's gone, to how do they manage their emotions and move forward, not without moving on?
I always tell people to keep a journal. You know, and you may not share it with anybody ever. If you're mad, if you're happy, if you're sad, whatever, you know, get your anger out in a journal. When I worked at the hospital, I remember meeting a young couple and his diagnosis was grim. I mean, they were like 30, had a young son. And when I saw his diagnosis before I went to put a central line in him, I knew he had maybe 6 months at best. And I walk in and they're like this Barbie and Ken couple next door. I mean, just adorable, just so sweet. And she was so stressed. And before I put the line in, I just sat them both down. And I said, listen, let's just talk a minute. And I looked at him. I said, you're going to have so many people caring for you as well as your wife. And I looked at her. I said, you need to take care of yourself. And I looked at him and said, she needs to take care of herself. So if that means going to the movies or something, don't get mad at her. Because so many times you don't want to leave the one we're taking care of. I said, just, you know, allow her to be able to do this. And I looked at her, I said, you have to be honest. If it's hard for you, you have to be able to tell him or talk to somebody. But the journal was a big thing. It was interesting because 4 months later, they came back to the hospital and I was called up to go check on this line. And I didn't know it was them. And I walked in and I could see that he had really failed and I knew he didn't have much time left. But his wife looked at me and she just had tears in her eyes and she just said, I kept the journal. And I was just, sorry, I'm going to cry. But it was just so important that to me that she was taking care of herself. because she's young with young and everything, and how she's going to be able to handle everything is just, you know, it's so hard. And so to me, it's listening to your inner self when you're having a hard time or something, and acknowledging it, because you don't have to be perfect. You know, we all try to be, but we don't have to be perfect, and we don't always have to be nice. We can have a really bad day and say a lot of bad words and stuff and get it out of our system. But it's how do you do it and not really hurt people too?
Yeah, I love your authenticity and your compassion. And you know, we're close to wrapping up, so I wanted to, as I've known you for many, many years, obviously, and even as we're talking, the conversation's so real and it's so deep. And that's why one of the reasons I wanted to have this podcast show is to get people on here who are compassionate, who are authentic, who are living in integrity with their sole purpose. And I just really appreciate how much you've opened up and shared with our guests. So when I think about you, Debbie Jo, I think for me, there are three key virtues that define you. The words are love. The other one is compassion. And the third is kindness. So I wanted to ask you, I'm going to ask you what each means. So tell me what the word love means to you.
To me, that's unconditional love, that you love someone for their faults and for their virtue, you know, for their virtues and whatnot. But it's being there for that person. Love is it's not always, you know, hearts and flowers, but it's love is being in that person's life or having those people around you and accepting them for everything and continuing to love them even when it's hard to love them.
What does the word compassion mean to you?
Of course it's a feeling, but I think there's a strong thing between compassion and sympathy. It's feeling for the person and in that compassion, doing what you can do to help them. It might not be much more than just sitting there or sending a note, but I think compassion is reaching out to people that are in trouble and helping them in the best way that you can, or at least steering them towards those that can help them.
What does the word kindness mean to you?
Just, you know, keeping your mouth shut when you want to get mad at somebody, you know, mad at somebody for something. When you're, you know, kindness is being honest. Yes, I know.
Yes.
You've had
I
a lot
love
of
you.
Kindness.
Keeping your and vice versa. It's like, you know what? It's time to just shut the heck up and listen. Don't talk right now.
That's right. But, you know, in trying to, when you're talking to people or when you're dealing with people, you know, try to be aware of their feelings or their body language when you're talking to them. Because sometimes, you know, people just kind of do things or whatever, and they aren't looking at the person that they're supposedly being kind to, and it's not really all that kind at the moment. I think it's just, you know, looking at the people in front of you and seeing where you can help. You know, you may not be able to do anything, but seeing where you can help people and be aware that, you know, we're all different. You know, we're brought up differently. We all walk different walks. But, you know, there's no reason not to be kind to that person, even if they don't have the same values as you.
Right. Well, I think it's also letting people be, right? Because one of the gifts that you've given me over the years is the gift of just letting me talk or letting me be who I am. And it's rare to find people that let you express yourself as you are all the time. There's no judgment. There's no, you know, be this person, be that. It's just your kindness means loving people exactly as they are and accepting them and celebrating their uniqueness. And then also, I think when people in conversation, people tend to sometimes not listen, and you have a beautiful gift of listening and knowing when to not say anything and what time to talk, what time to not say anything. And I think that's an act of kindness in itself is being able to gauge people and what they need and when they need it and when to show up and when to just kind of, you know, let them grow. And that's a beautiful thing to be able to give to your friends and colleagues. Well, I can't believe that we're almost done. I really enjoyed talking to you. I feel like people are going to hear this conversation and really get a lot out of it in terms of, you know, how to live your soul purpose, how to grow and change, how to deal with painful situations, and how to just show up as who you are and follow what brings you joy. So before we sign off, Debbie Jo, how can people find you on Facebook, on Twitter, and on Instagram?
Okay, on Facebook, it's, you can look up Designs by Debbie Jo, and that's D-E-B-I-J-O. And on Twitter, it's at Debbie Jo Designs. And on Instagram, it's Debbie Jo 11.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, Debbie Jo, I just love you, and you're amazing. And I'm so glad I had you on the show today. So until next time, folks, live bliss, love bliss, and be bliss. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Pure Bliss Show with Mema Carmo. We hope you were inspired by the show. Remember, you're the catalyst that the world has been waiting for. In each moment, live in pure bliss.